TWO Radio at Radio Stormer on the Daily Stormer.com.
Hello and welcome to the first edition of Truth Will Out Radio, or TWO Radio, on the Radio Stormer Network at the Daily Stormer.com. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and I have Dennis Wise with me, creator of The Greatest Story Never Told. And just before we get going with the podcast, I just remind people that we have got a chat room, which is always bustling and full of people. So please do join the chat room. And also you can follow the feed, listen to the live stream, you can subscribe to our podcasts. I think you can still play our radio station through the iTunes player, which means you can pause our broadcasts and see the metadata that comes with them. And obviously you can see the drafts of our original content that we put up on the dailystormer.com. So just to remind people there that we do have a multimedia facility at the Daily Stormer, and if the Daily Stormer site is down, like it is currently at the moment where Andre is working on it, you can still access all the Radio Stormer side of it through the chat room. Anyway, welcome, Dennis. How are you doing today?
I'm fine, thank you. Sven, yourself?
Yeah, pretty good. It's a bright, glorious, sunny day in sunny Wales. I hope the weather's good wherever you are, somewhere in Britain.
No, it's cloudy.
that's no good.
It's cloudy.
Traditional British weather. I thought, well, we could start this programme off by answering some of the questions that were put in the comments section of the Behind the Reich series. I thought there were a lot more questions than I actually found. I went through them, all the articles yesterday, and I really couldn't find many questions, so that means we must have done a good job, basically, if we answered people's questions, I think.
Could be.
Yeah, well, the first one I got was from somebody called Les, and he made this comment on May the 31st. He said, "We were told that if we did not fight against Hitler, that we would all be speaking German. During World War II, the Germans occupied the Channel Islands. Does anyone have any proof that they made the locals take compulsory German lessons?"
Well, I'm not aware of it, to be quite honest, whether or not, you know, I'm right or not, but as far as I am aware that everything ticked over as normal, apart from them stripping down the Freemason Lodge. Most things just carried on, you know, the police were in the uniforms as English police, and although there were German troops there, there doesn't seem to be any animosity with the natives or likewise.
Well, yeah, I mean, it seems to me this was one of the fears that were put about, was that everybody was going to be speaking German. It wasn't just in the Channel Islands. I mean, just all in Britain there was this fear, oh, if Hitler comes over and invades the country, he's going to make everybody speak German. And, of course, what you hear now in our capital cities is Urdu and Punjabi and Nigerian. You don't even have Cockney anymore, do you? It's a lost language. So this big fear that was put about wasn't true. And one of the things I did hear, when the National Socialists took over the Channel Islands, was that they put a stop to the child abuse in the children's homes. And they said anybody caught abusing the children will be hanged in the square. And that was something that I did hear. And that when the National Socialists were there, that was the only point that this abuse wasn't going on in those children's homes, because of course there was this terrible scandal there a couple of years back that they've tried to hush up, wasn't there? Did you hear much about that, Dennis?
Yeah, Hope Legrand it was called. Apparently there was a big police investigation, and they discovered bones, children's bones, and evidence of torture, but the police official in charge was replaced at a certain point, and then the excuse came up that the bones were from another era, and the whole investigation was closed down, which most people regard as a cover-up, which has been going on in Britain for quite some time now with the, you know, even with the Jimmy Savile and beyond, you know. But, yeah, certainly, from what I heard, there was children being supplied to government officials. One of them was Ted Heath, who used to take them on the yacht. And if the children were over a certain age and recognised him, that was the last journey they ever took. And that's just a sample of what I've heard. And like I said, the police operation, which was going fine and looked like there were going to be people who were going to face arrest, suddenly the whole operation was closed down. The police guy in charge was replaced, retired, and fresh police took over and closed the whole thing down.
Yeah, that's what I heard. There was the guy that was in charge really wanted to get this done, and they retired him and put someone else there again. And it was there was a big Freemason influence as well, because all the top brass in the police were Freemasons. The Freemasons running the children's home.
That's right.
And I think this police officer that was replaced, I think he wasn't a Freemason. So there's, and it's all been hushed up again.
Yeah.
It's been totally silenced. I think there was a BBC Panorama on it at the time, and nothing's been heard of it since. And they just
nothing come of it. No.
As I say, what I heard was the only time that abuse stopped was when the National Socialists were there in the Channel Islands.
Well, they did destroy the actual Freemason Lodge, which would have gone a long way to stopping that as well. So that doesn't surprise me. You know, the point being, Freemasonry is the problem. Even if you're low-ranked Freemasonry, the actual concept of Freemasonry as kind of a boys' club, and, you know, the people can give you a business and boost by giving you contacts, etc. If you're not in that club, if you're outside that club, which most people are, then they're segregated at a disadvantage, because, obviously, to go into the Freemasons is an advantage, even at the lower levels. So the whole concept of it is divisive, and as the country goes, ordinary people are at a disadvantage.
Yeah, if you're not part of the club, then you're not able to really
do
business.
That's the lower levels, yeah. Exactly, but obviously in the higher levels, where you've got contacts of, you know, the 33 degree, etc., you know, around the world, Roosevelt was 33 degree, Churchill was 33 degree, you know, and it's like a network, which Hitler realised, working against nationalism, if you like, because if a Freemason takes a blood oath and swears allegiance to Freemasonry and silence, then it goes everything against, you know, you don't particularly want, if you're a leader of a country, you don't particularly want that in your country, especially if you're not a Freemason like Hitler was. But if you're a Freemason like Cameron, you know, it's all part of the club. And like I said, it's divisive to a loud section. And to be quite honest, we've probably been ruled by 300 Freemasons now for a couple of centuries, because it's all handed down and all hereditary and, as you say, in the club.
You're listening to Radio Stormer on the dailystormer.com.
But what you were saying about the Freemasons there, Dennis, that's just it, isn't it? Is that they take these oaths to support each other, and that automatically...
Blood oaths, yeah.
Yeah, that automatically breaks the loyalty to your nation. I mean, this was the thing that the Freemasons did. This liberty, fraternity and brotherhood and all this, all that was about breaking the links with your own nation. Because originally, before you had these secret societies, I mean, just naturally, you would be loyal to your people. But as soon as you have a secret society that comes in there, it goes against that and says, instead of being loyalty to your people as a whole, you have a higher loyalty to this secretive group.
And that's right. In the case of Hitler, if he's got a secret society running in his country, obviously he's not a member of this. It's the last thing he wants. Besides the fact that they've got certain history with the Catholic Church and the Vatican, Hitler wanted rid of them anyway and got rid of them throughout Europe. In the case of Britain, where the upper elite have never really cared about the nation, or the working class in the nation, they use them for taxes more than anything. So in the case of the Freemasons in this country, then even the government, who are Freemasons, are in a secret society which works against the people of the country. But we haven't got anybody like Hitler who can just walk in and destroy everything. And so consequently, these Freemasons rule with the fact that they made a blood oath, which overrules anything nationalistic. They won't give up people like Jimmy Savile or people of that ilk who's committed any crimes, because it's against what their oath said. Do you get me?
Well, yeah, and it's not the lower down people. They don't know about this. I mean, they think the Freemasons are like this charitable organisation. But when you get right to the top, and you get these small groups, and they're also intertwined with the Secret Service and the intelligence agencies, because they can be relied on not to divulge any of the secrets. So you've got the Freemason group which links up with the intelligence agencies, doesn't it?
Well, that's right, and there's also people in this country who are above the law, because at one stage there was a charge against Kenneth Clark of molestation, but the police said that they couldn't arrest him, he was above the law. And at the time he was in the government. Where they stand now, because he seems to resign nice and quietly, I don't know. But obviously there's preferential treatment to certain people in this country. It's not, across the board. And they come with these political correct ideas, but if you're a Catholic, you can't be Prime Minister. There's certain laws against Catholics being head of the police or head of any major organisation. So there's a discrimination there which has always been there, well, been there for a few hundred years at least, which are quietly swept aside and people forget about.
Well, one of the things that this Secret Service Freemasons were involved in, the British ones were involved in, was the Bolshevik Revolution. It was the British Secret Service that made certain that Lenin was passed safe passage through Germany into Russia. With the money. Mm-hmm. I just learned this the other day from...
He got apprehended in Canada, didn't he? Yeah. The Canadians were holding him, and it was the British who told the Canadians to let him go, which they did.
So you've got this supranational group, the Freemasons are, that cross borders, cross boundaries. It's very similar to the Jews. And obviously their loyalty... is actually to the Jews. One of the
foundation of it is Jewish. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the degrees that they take is an oath to look out for the Jews' interests, especially. They say they're supposed to look out for widows and orphans, and especially look out for the Jews and the Jewish interests is a part of one of their degrees, because they have all these various different degrees and oaths that they have. They claim that it goes all the way back to Egypt and Hiram Abiff and the...
That's right. Albert Pike wrote 65 pages on the Kabbalah. So all that comes into, the Jewish mysticism all comes into it. It is basically a Jewish... It's Jewish at its roots, which, again, Hitler would have known. And there was another reason why, destroyed it wherever he went.
And the only time it's ever been removed from British territories was when the Germans were in the Channel Islands.
It's something that
I think I'm going to try and find out more about it myself, because it is interesting to think that the Germans were there on the British territory in the Channel Islands, and it would be good to find out more about what happened there. I know they had a... it was in the news the other day, wasn't it?
Well, I've got a video in one of the episodes of the new documentary I'm doing, which actually shows footage of a Freemason whinging about the Germans, explaining how they came in and vandalised the place. And what they actually did is stripped the place, shipped it all back to Germany, and they had exhibitions of why Freemasonry was evil, and for the public to go and see. And obviously all these black and white checkered floors and all the regalia, like, which was stripped from all these places from all over Europe and the Channel Islands, were taken back, I think, to Nuremberg, actually, and put on display for the people to go witness and educated of the evils of Freemasonry. No, I did cover that, you know.
Yeah, they also made a film exposing it, didn't they? It's Dark Forces or Occult That's right, Forces, yeah. And that exposes, it's set in France, and it shows you how these Freemasons infiltrated the government there and started wars and were working across borders and like a spy network, basically.
Well, yeah, that's basically what it was, yeah.
It's inseparable from the spy networks, I think.
Well, there's a lot of rumours about Hitler and the cult and the Freemasons. I mean, I had many an argument with people about Hitler being a Freemason before I found the footage. Well, I had the footage, actually, but I wanted to hang on to it until I could use it properly, which I did in the documentary. And people used to say that Hitler was a Freemason, which was absolutely ridiculous because, you know, there's a whole list of Freemasons. You go on the Freemason website and it'll tell you just exactly how it persecuted them. But yeah, the fact is, you're quite right, it was like a spy network, which was the last thing you needed in a war.
And involved in all the revolution, from the French Revolution to the Bolshevik Revolution, and I dare say heavily involved in this revolution that's going on in the Ukraine. Do you think these spy networks want to, you know, they go to another country and they want to know that there's people that they aren't going to divulge their secrets? So they can just go to the lodge there and speak to the people in the lodge, do their
fine. Well, that's right. Yeah.
Show that they're all Masons, and then they can get them to divulge secrets about the country. So you've got it's like a separate government that's controlling things, like a shadow government. And it's been referred to by people in governments. They make reference to these shadowy groups that are controlling the affairs of the country. And what they mean is Jews and Freemasons.
Yeah, well, there's also the Druid thing comes into it as well, because when the Druids in Britain were being wiped out by the Romans, some had to go underground, and they actually went actually appeared centuries later out of Freemasonry, because the teachings were very similar. An Oxford University, which was founded by the Druids, actually has the Rhodes Scholarship, which Rhodes, obviously a Rothschild, worked for the Rothschilds in South Africa. There were scholarships there for people all around the world who regarded as potential Rothschild leaders in their particular country. They come to the Oxford University, take the Rhodes Scholarship, and then are sent back to their own country. One of them was Clinton. Clinton was a scholar, a Rhodes Scholar, and beneath all the exterior, he's a Rothschild man.
Well, I think these modern day Druids, or the people that try to link themselves with them, I think is totally distant or totally different to what the original Druidry was, because the original Druids became Christian. I mean, Britain became a Christian country in 150 AD, and that was with the blessing of the Druids. The Druids and the Christians, very, very similar beliefs. It may have been slightly different in Ireland, and there, you know, there were some bad things written about them, but I think that was sort of propaganda from Julius Caesar, because the Britain was Christianity and Druidism were legal in Britain, and both those religions were the religions that Caesar and the Romans were trying to put out, because they were patriotic and they had a belief in the afterlife. They wouldn't worship Caesar, they would worship the one God. But nowadays, you get the people that think that Druidry is all pagan and these other gods. And as you say, you've got people like Winston Churchill involved. You've got the head of the Church of England. Yeah, they claim to be these modern-day Druids. And it's more linked with Aleister Crowley's sort of stuff than the original Druids.
Yeah, that's sure, what they were involved in.
It's a twisted thing, you know.
It is twisted, and Crowley does come into it. Crowley comes into it. I don't particularly like the guy, but he keeps cropping up in my documentary. I have to keep mentioning it whenever I bump into him. And Hollywood is a place where Crowley is admired. The music industry is a place where Crowley is admired. The actual event at the Olympic Games when it shows Lucifer coming down, well, the Phoenix rising and what is supposed to be Lucifer coming down from the skies, that was an O.T.O. Crowley presentation, shall we say. This guy crops up in quite a few places, and obviously he was one of the highest ranked Freemasons as well, so definitely ties up.
And he was a spy in the spy network.
Well, he was a spy. It was a spy, but it was also anti-Christian. So all these connections with Crowley in Hollywood and the music industry and the royal family, you know, the government of today, as I said, in the Olympic Games, they did these subtle little presentations, which the crowd had no idea about. I mean, you know, what has a burning phoenix got to do with, with one of the world's great sporting occasions? But they get away with it, and apparently it's all tied into Crowley, and he was into paedophilia, child sacrifice, tremendous things, horrible things, which an ordinary person wouldn't particularly want to even discuss. Crowley did it, and these practices are going on today as well in Hollywood and other places. He has a lot to be. He has a lot to answer for. I mean, John Lennon and people like that, you know, we're all Crowley fans, anti-Christian, anti-Christ, not in the best interests of people's culture, I wouldn't have thought.
Well, I would have thought he would have been very, very proud of this gay marriage thing that's going on.
Well, that's another one,
anal marriage. He came out with the Black Mass, which was the opposite of the Mass. You've got this gay marriage, which is the opposite of marriage. It's a desecration of marriage. It's sodomy. Desecration.
Funnily enough, we tried to get a channel up on Vimeo for the Greatest Story Never Told documentary, and Vimeo sent us a reply saying that they didn't think that the DVD was what they wanted on their site, and kindly refunded us. And stopped us from, any more activity there. But I can go on Vimeo today, and you can actually tap in the OTO Satanic Mass, and they have a full hour of the Mass of Aleister Crowley with the nude women and all the magic chants and everything. So you tell me, it's the world is an upside down place at the moment.
He was into doing everything to the extremes and the opposite of anything that was Christian. So he wanted to be as immoral as possible and as wicked as possible, evil as possible. Called himself the Beast, the Antichrist, 666. And you've got these people today name-checking him and seeing as some great man. I mean, he was a spy as well.
Well, as far as my investigations or research went on Crowley, I do believe at some point, he wrote the Book of Law, and that was apparently a demon that he'd resurrected, and for 3 days or something like that in Egypt, was given this knowledge and wrote down this Book of Law, which they all tend to swear by, even the Hollywood actors do what thou wilt. And I do believe that he had mastered that conjuring of demons. He also had an article in a London newspaper in the 30s, I believe, where he spoke about the axilla of life, which was the fountain of youth. And he actually wrote this in a London newspaper. And the first time he took it, he actually overdosed and was chopping trees down for months. But then suffered badly by taking this overdose. It reacted badly after time. But about 3 or 4 years later, he actually took it again. And he wrote that he was as strong and as athletic as any 30-year-old or late 20s. I think at the time he was in his 50s. And this would appeal to the elite of the world, who were obviously multi-trillionaires and money means nothing to them, or something like this would appeal to them. And, you know, you've got to question the fact that these royals, etc., lived till into the hundreds, and yet people like Rockefeller and Kissinger, they're all living long, healthy lives. Whether or not, you know, he did actually discover something. So all this all ties up with what's going on today in the New World Order, and you know, the trouble that Christianity's in today as well. It all ties up back to Crowley. Certainly, there's not enough known about him for him to have such a reputation in mainstream, if you like.
Well, you imagine, you know, he's talking about this elixir of life. It's either a drug, or it would have been, you know, it would have been blood, or something produced by the human body. Maybe taking somebody's blood just before you killed them in a sacrifice or whatever. You know, you hear these blood rituals, don't you? This blood drinking right the way through history, especially the Jews, who accused of it time and time again, confessed to it time and time again, yeah. And had entire rituals and books and special days of the year when they would actually do this. So that there is this big history with it, and with the Jews being involved with Freemasonry and Crowley. You know, I dare say that's what he was doing.
Well, the thing is, with what they say is, with especially with the child sacrifice, is that obviously the blood is virginal, but the fear that the child feels before actually being killed causes some kind of adrenaline rush, which if the child is then killed and the blood is drunk quickly, that adrenaline which has gone into the blood is then passed into the body of the drinker. That's what they believe. And this gives them strength, youth and vitality over a long period of time of these sacrifices. Whether or not that is actually true, what happens, but you can well imagine that, you know, there is some kind of adrenaline rush, even if you go on to a Big Dipper, you know, Blackpool or a fairground. So, I don't doubt the scientific knowledge of it is quite possible.
Yeah, it's quite feasible. I mean, these heroes of the New World Order, I mean, they're just demons. I mean, Aleister Crowley, Nelson Mandela, you know, they're monsters, basically, and the devils of the New World Order, like Adolf Hitler and Bashar al-Assad and Mussolini, they were the heroes. I mean, Hitler was a prophet and a saint. I mean, the test of a true prophet, according to the Bible, is whether their prophecies come true. And everything Hitler said came true. This brings me to the next comment that I actually have here, Dennis. This is the next one, and this one's from Her Sounzo, and this is from April the 1st. And he has a quote from Adolf Hitler, and then he asks a question. And the quote is, "It is necessary that I should die for my people, but my spirit shall rise from the grave, and the world will know that I was right." And he says, you got this from the video, The Decay of Western Civilization, right? Well, wherever you got this from, I highly doubt Hitler said this. I suppose someone took the liberty to paraphrase something Julius Streicher said in his political testament and attributed it to Hitler. But unless it can be confirmed to be indeed an actual quote. Now, I've heard this quote myself, and I thought it was in his last will and testament. I thought it was a quote from in that, but I believe you used that in the documentary, Dennis. Do you know more about this?
Well, from the research that I went into it, like I actually, from what I can remember, is I went in and saw it in the George Rockwell. It was quoted in that book, and it was quoted, I believe, by Ribbentrop as well. And the fact that it's okay saying he can't prove he said it, but nobody could prove that he didn't say it. And the fact that people like Ribbentrop had mentioned it, and as you just mentioned, Jude Stryker, I decided that it's more than possible that he did use it, and it's something that he would say, I would believe. So rather than go down the road of saying it can't be proven the other way neither, and I just felt that it was right for the documentary. Now, whether people want to believe it or not, that's entirely up to them, but personally, I believe that he did say it.
Well, yeah, if it's in George Lincoln Rockwell's book, and I'm sure I saw it in his that it was written before he committed suicide. I'm sure
that's
I read it. And again, the words are true. His spirit has risen from the grave, and the world is learning that he was right. You're seeing a big movement of people that are supporting National Socialist ideals. 10 years ago, you wouldn't have had people shouting Hitler was right, and
10 years ago, so then you wouldn't have had the BBC putting on a programme such as The Savage Peace, which goes part way to showing what happened to the Germans after the war. Although, you know, they didn't exactly go the full mile. You know, with the steady flow of the internet and documentaries like my own and the Hellstorm, it gets quite ridiculous when, you know, there's silence on it, or, you know, denial that it ever happened. So the internet and these documentaries, in a way, are forcing people like the BBC to come clean, not as much as they should do, and so that's a good thing, and I'm quite sure there's a lot more out there which needs to be discovered. So we're without a doubt the fact that Hitler is now being proven right, that statement is more enhanced than at any time in history.
Yeah, and the internet is helping to get this truth out to people.
Sure.
You know, you've got National Action in Britain now, which, you know, they're quite unashamed of being National Socialists. They're proud to be National Socialists. They're shouting Hitler was right. People may not agree with all the way that they go about doing things, but they are quite upfront about the fact that Hitler is their inspiration. And if you look a few years back, you've got the British National Party doing their hardest to distance themselves from National Socialism. Yeah. Really trying their hardest to get away from that. And yet you've now got Nordfront and Finnish Resistance, Swedish Resistance, all of them are talking about National Socialism and National Socialist ideals. Kai Muros.
That's like India as well.
Yeah, in India. They've got a big thing for Hitler over there, haven't they? Yeah, the ice cream. I saw the other day they had this ice cream and these cafes and restaurants. See, outside of the Western world, Hitler is seen how he should be seen. Mm-hmm. And for them, it was thanks to him that the British Empire crumbled. So he gained their freedom, helping our freedom in Europe, putting a stop to communism making its way into Western Europe. If it wasn't for Hitler going against Stalin at that time, then Bolshevism would have worked its way right into the West of Europe. So he protected Europe and freed the lands that were in bondage to the crown.
Yeah, well, communism goal is to take over the world, so it certainly put a dent in that ambition.
Talking about this sort of area of the war, this brings us to another comment, and this one's from Jews Are Bad News. And this one is from April 2nd. And he says, was it a mistake for Hitler to have allied with Italy and Japan? Many tell me that he should have went it alone and that they were useless allies. Is that true, or is it just anti-Italian, anti-Japanese sentiment? So what do you think of that, Dennis?
Well, as far as I know, again, I don't think he had any problem with Japan at all. I think he wished that they had attacked the Soviet Union, but they did have some kind of a treaty with the Soviet Union, which the Japanese, being honourable people, as the honour treaties, refused to do that, which was You know, if they had done that at the time when Hitler was in the Soviet Union heading for Moscow, it would have been a great help to him. But apart from that, I don't think he had any problems with the Japanese. In fact, I think he felt that it was good to have an ally down in that area with such, you know, honour and hatred of communism themselves. Italy was another story, I think. I think Hitler felt that every time that the Italians tried to impress they messed up and the Germans had to go in and pull them out. And certainly the Greece farce, he was not happy about it because it stopped the Germans invading the Soviet Union by 6 weeks. And when you think they got to the doors of Moscow the same week that the winter started, that 6 week period would have been vital to them if they had got there a month and a half earlier. So, but not only that, you know, in Africa and other places, wherever the Italians went, you know, their defeats gave Churchill and Britain, you know, a light at the end of the tunnel, even though, you know, like I said, the Germans are going and do the best to clean up. It's never good to have somebody going in into a country and then being defeated and having to be pulled out. I think he felt that he should have been more dominant with the Italians and not as, you know, although, you know, he admired Mussolini, I think he did feel that the Italians were a pain at the best.
Yeah, I think this alliance with Japan, although they were honourable, I mean, it was another race. But I suppose he's thinking that the rest of the world is against him. He's going to take as many allies as he can. I mean, if he was allied with Stalin at the beginning of the war, who was Bolshevik, then he's got to take as many allies as are offering. So I think that was the acceptable reason for Japan, because people do try and point out the fact that Hitler had these allies of these other races, that he would, if he was alive in the world today, he would be supportive of being allied with Muslims, because the Muslims are against the Jews. But the problem is the Muslims are invading our lands at the moment. So they're saying, well, let's get rid of the Jews and then we're going to get out of your lands once we've done that. But they're not saying that. They may be against the Jews, but they still want more of their kinsmen to come over into Britain, and they're not condemning the rapes that go on and the crime that's associated with them. They don't condemn that, and they support ISIS in these countries. So they may claim to be against the Jews, but... you know, you can't be allied with them, and you can't put, I don't think we can put Hitler up as the example because he was allied with Japan and the Grand Mufti of Palestine. I don't think that can be put up as an example.
No, times have changed. Times have changed, and as you say, like, you know, Europe's flooded now with Muslims, and they don't really know why they're there, but obviously the Jews play a big part in it. If they're causing havoc in Libya and Syria, and boat people are turning up in hundreds of thousands, and Europe's opening the doors, then it's perfect for the Jews, because not only are they causing havoc down in the Middle East, they're also getting to a point where Europe is becoming mongrelized as well. So, the sad fact is that while the whites and the Muslims will clash in Europe, it is the Jew which is happily sitting back and watching it all. Which they've always done throughout history, unfortunately. But I think times have changed, and certainly to stop what is going on in Europe and the birth rates and what are falling and the mongrelisation what is taking place, I would recommend that they will be sent back to where they came from.
You know, you can't say, well, we'll ally with these people because they're enemies to us.
The white race will be non-existent if it keeps up.
Yeah, I mean, we can support Bashar al-Assad in Syria. I mean, he's, you know, look at who he's fighting against. He's fighting against ISIS and he is fighting against the Jew. And they've even got...
And we protect Christians.
Yeah, well, they've got resistance to the Jew written into their constitution. is resistance to Zionism. It forms part of their actual constitution. But we've got hardly anyone from Syria and Britain. We haven't got people from Syria invading Britain. The amount of Syrians in Britain you could probably count on, you know, less than 1,000, I would say. And they're not trying to get in here as refugees either. So it's not, you know, like we have a problem with Syrians. It's all Pakistanis and Bangladeshis and the ones that are coming over from the Mediterranean that are coming into Britain.
Well, you've got to understand then, right, you know, since like World War Two, immediately after World War Two, you know, the people what died in the war were quickly replaced by West Indians being allowed to come into the country. This elite, glass roof that we have in this country, where they look down on all of us as they don't look as any different, the Irish or the Pakistani or Polish or even British working class. All they're there for is to be taxed and drained of what money they earn, so that the upper class will benefit and always have benefited from it. I mean, when they went around the world plundering as an empire, the working class never actually gained anything from it. Although you'll hear on YouTube, you'll see many people saying, oh, the British Empire was this, that and the other, but they never gained from it. You know, it was the upper class and the royalty, and the Jews would have since married into the royalty as well. So all they're doing, really, I mean, there must have been a big, if you counted how many people have emigrated from England since the 80s, those people need replacing. And they've replaced them, as we, like you said, with the Pakistanis, the Polish, etc., because it keeps the taxes flowing.
They even admit that that's what they're doing, is replacing the white people, don't they? They say, well, we've got
it doesn't matter to
the country, or we haven't got enough white people being born, so we'll just replace them all with these brown creatures.
Well, when was the last time the Queen was in Bradford?
Bradford Bradford is Stan. It's like all these cities in Britain, they're just, you know...
it means nothing to them because they're not in their world, you know, they don't go to Bradford, and I'm quite sure they don't let them into their world where they live. So, you know, like I said, it doesn't really matter what colour or what creed, as long as the taxes are flowing in. And they, of course, they're thinking of genius ways of taxes as well, because not only will they tax your wage, they'll tax your, your police fines now, you've got your speed cameras, you've got your lottery tickets, and the biggest con of all then is VAT, because the majority of this country are not VAT registered, and so that means they're charged 20% on practically every goods going in this country, and they can't claim it back. So that is another silent tax, whether it be on your newspapers, on your cigarettes, on your drink, on your petrol. You know, the working class of this country, who are particularly not VAT registered, are hammered silently, and even your coffin and your funeral has VAT. So that last little kick before you leave this world, just to drag that little bit of tax out of you, is there. And then, you know,
well, even once after you are gone, they still carry on taxing you. You've got inheritance tax.
Well, there you go. Exactly.
So whatever it is, gradually, you know, within three or four generations, it's all gone to the government. They've taken the lot.
They've taken everything, yeah. But this is what they want. I mean, and then they plead. I mean, I can remember the recessions back in the 80s. I can't really remember this country not having a recession. But for all their pleading of poverty, and we've got to pull in our belts and face this austerity, they've always found time to send, enter a war and send the planes over and drop the bombs, and suddenly the money's found.
Oh, they've always got plenty of money for a war, haven't they?
Exactly.
Never too tight to be able to afford that.
Yeah, but people are that occupied trying to survive, or the majority of people in this country are that occupied trying to survive. Their only relaxation is probably putting their feet up and watching EastEnders of Coronation Street, where they're getting sublimely influenced there as well, because the millions and millions who watch these soaps are influenced by, seeing gays accepted in these soap operas, etc., and other means of if you like, brainwashing. So it's a constant battle which people are even unaware of.
Well, this sort of brings us to another comment which we've got here, which is about how to make people aware of these things. And this comes from the chat room, this comment. This was from someone called Vizza. And he says, how do you explain the bombing of England to older British people? I just saw a propaganda documentary on PBS about how Hitler the madman was only targeting civilians. And I think this was specifically in reference to the bombing of the British cities, because older British people, they think, oh, well, he attacked the civilians. And that they're not aware of what Britain was actually doing to Germany to actually cause that. Wasn't it for 3 months Britain had been bombing Germany before Hitler finally lost his rag and decided to do the same to Britain?
Well, there's a speech which he gave in the Reichstag, which I mentioned in the documentary as well, where he'd waited for 3 months, in his own words, for Churchill to stop playing these silly games where the planes would bomb civilians or shoot at civilians whenever they saw them. And for 3 months he waited, but then he announced the Reichstag, he can't wait no longer. And so in retaliation, they will be targeting certain parts of the population. But he was forced into that, to be quite honest. And even then it was half-hearted. Nothing compared to what happened to, every city in Germany was eventually firebombed, and Dresden was a perfect example. But there is the fact that the British Army had gone around, or the British Empire rather, gone around the world and caused mayhem, rape, destruction and murder. And the island had never, ever got any problems in that 300 years. The only problem they ever did get was the fact that Germany was bombing them, which, in my opinion, they got off lightly for all the pillaging and raping and drugging what they did around the world anyway. Very lightly, but I can understand people saying, the older generation hate Hitler because he targeted civilians, but that was only after Churchill and Bomber Harris refused to stop bombing German civilians. Hello?
What's that noise?
Oh, was that kicked off again?
It's like an aeroplane going off.
Is that better?
No, it's like a really loud noise. Is someone doing the hoovering or something?
No. It's I can't actually hear it.
That's better. You've swapped it now.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know what that was, but you stopped it.
Okay,
where are we up to? 40, okay. Yeah, I think one of the main things that I see in older people is they've been so brainwashed by this holo hoax imagery. They've seen these documentaries and they saw them years ago, and their faith in the BBC years ago was that the BBC would never lie to them. And they were shown these pictures of these emaciated people, told that they were Jews and that the Germans had done this to them deliberately. So I think one of the hardest things to break is the holo hoax with the older people, that and this bombing of the British cities. So,
well, I don't think it's just the older people, because the indoctrination is now going into the schools, or has been going into the schools for quite some time, and that's around the world. Even China now have a Holocaust exhibition centre. They're spending $50 million on one in London, and Australia and other places like that have all. They've got so much money to spend on keeping this alive that that children of generations whose parents obviously believe it because of the indoctrination will be affected as well. So this is why Spielberg made the documentary showing these Holocaust survivors talking about it, saying about the gas chambers, etc., because they will eventually die out, and a lot of them have died out. So they want this archive film to be kept, and plus with the exhibitions of the building. I don't know whether you've been on YouTube or not, and ever been into a Holocaust exhibition centre, say in America. They are on YouTube. And I went on one particular day just to see what was going on, and you know, the machine guns going off. It's like a bit of a Disneyland, if you like, where the Germans are shouting, in, you know, obviously in German, and screams and etc. As school kids are being fed through these dark, you know, hallways where, you know, they're showing these victims of Jews, either dummies or footage. So it's all, by the time they've gone through this Disneyland of Holocaust exhibition, by the time they come out the other side, many are in tears, many are traumatised, and it stays with them for years on end, and this is the problem. So it isn't just the older end, because they'll die anyway eventually, but they need to keep this thing going. And Cameron, with his new laws, I'm quite sure has got this in mind, where to actually say that the Holocaust didn't exist will be classed as hate speech or incitement to hatred, and they'll use this to tighten things up even more. So you know, they know what they're doing. Simple as that, really.
You know, it conjures up images of kids on the ghost train going through these little clapper shuttered doors. Sure. on a little trolley going through like this ghost train horror house of the Holocaust. That's what I sort of imagine them doing with these kids. I mean, that's all it is. It's all make believe. It really is.
You have to spend $50 million on the building in London. That's going to be some ghost train.
Well, yeah, and as you say, Spielberg went and got these recordings of these quote-unquote eyewitnesses, knowing that they're going to die off because they could never be cross-examined. So they've got this on record, and they can't be cross-examined by people. They can't be questioned. I think the only good thing you can say about that is that some of them did actually speak the truth and said, we were treated really well.
They left them out, though.
Well, I think there's some of them on the last days of the big lie.
Yeah.
There's footage of some of the
there is
on there. Yeah. And they're saying, you know, we were treated very well. I think you used some of that in Story Never Told.
Convinced Spielberg used them, though.
He didn't use them, but they're part of part of his Shoah Foundation, wasn't it? They are accessible. The records are there. So, you know, that was the only good thing that can
without the internet, without the internet, where would you go to research the Holocaust today?
Well, it was just shocking, isn't it? If it wasn't for the internet, we would still be in the dark, wouldn't we?
Exactly. Wherever you went, you know, your libraries or, you know, your films, you're influenced by Hollywood, you're influenced by documentaries, BBC. There's just no way that, without the internet, there's no way that you could find any evidence of it not happening.
Oh yeah, you just can't find the truth out about these things. I mean, this brings me to the last comment, and I couldn't find exactly where I got this one from, so I couldn't say who this one was from, but it's from people that wanted to know more about the supposed gun controls, because Alex Jones and various other of the conspiracy community are always saying that Hitler took the guns away from the Germans, and being in Britain, we don't have gun laws, so it doesn't get used so much over here. But I know in America it gets used a lot, that supposedly Hitler took all the guns away from the people, so they weren't able to defend themselves against the evil monster Hitler. So I don't know if you can elaborate on this, Dennis.
Well, the problem with America having guns is that for the people in power to do what they want to do, they don't really need a nation what carry guns or carry arms. And apparently, they've had fleeting attempts at passing laws, which have all failed. And the latest one, I believe, is that they're going to get the United Nations to do the job for them. They're already advertising for people who are willing to go into these houses and take these guns. That remains to be, you know, an option for them. And obviously, a nation without guns like ourselves, where the people in power have the guns, means that there's not a lot we can do. And they want the similar thing in America. And Alex Jones is just one of a few who used that lie, if you like, about Hitler stripping his nations of his of their weapons, and then being able to tell them, you know, if you don't do this, then, you know, consequences. Actually, the truth of it is, in after the surrender at the Treaty of Versailles, the government legislation which was brought in by the government at the time, they were the ones that banned all private firearm possession and confiscated any guns what were in circulation. And in Mein Kampf, chapter 12, Hitler talks about it and mentions that the politicians on the left, because he actually thought that he was mainstream, he was centre. He criticises the people on the left, the politicians on the left, which allowed this to happen, and also called the people on the right traitorous also for allowing this to happen. And so he writes about it in Mein Kampf, and at the end of the day, he for him to be accused of taking these guns, it is a lie. It is a lie.
Well, I read that they had to register them, which is fair enough. You register that you're a gun owner, but Jews weren't allowed to own guns. So I think this is...
Well, Jews weren't allowed a lot of things.
The Jews weren't allowed to own guns. Now, if in America... Well, this is because the
enemies
Jews
of the
were
state.
Enemies of the state. Now, in America, okay, we get told, oh, they have all these gun problems, but the majority of the gun problems comes from the blacks having them. If the blacks weren't allowed to have guns, you wouldn't have gun problems in America. And it's the same thing, because the blacks are pretty much the enemies of the state, really, over there with their guns. They're too emotional to be responsible with them. They can't control their emotions enough to be responsible with guns. They will use guns to just settle minor disputes and just fire them off in the air. It's the same with the non-whites in Libya, firing all their guns off in the air, and their bullets falling down from the air and landing in people's heads, just shooting the guns off in celebration and things like that. These people can't be trusted with guns. So if only responsible people had them, like most white people, then it wouldn't be a problem. So, I mean, what Hitler did was he took the guns away from the people that were irresponsible or that would have been harming the Germans. So the Germans...
Well,
enemies
of the state.
Yeah.
Exactly, enemies of the state. But having said that about the guns, like, it isn't actually the gun what's the problem, it's the person what uses the gun. I mean, the gun doesn't kill anybody unless the person pulls the trigger. And in America, they have this law where... which is totally opposite to the law in Britain, where if a burglar enters a house in Britain and you beat him up, you can get done for it. Where in America, if somebody breaks in your house and that burglar suffers, you know, getting beaten up or even killed, then, you know, nothing is said because the burglar entered your premises. So there's a whole thing going on there. So I mean, you know, I think if the Americans do ever get to a point where they have to give the guns up, if they ever did, it would be a problem.
Well, I think that principle of if somebody's breaking into your house, then you defend yourself from them, that's the principle that should be used with these immigrants that are coming over in these boats. Not going out to rescue them, but these people are breaking into your house. They've lost all rights to anything. They've lost all rights to life. They're invading the country. It's the same as a home invasion. It's the same as if a gang of Negroes burst into your home and tied you up and started stealing everything. That's what it. That's what it is when these immigrants are invading our country.
I'll tell you something, Sven. I'll bet if an immigrant invaded or burgled the house of a Freemason and the Freemason killed him, I don't think the Freemason would see any time.
No, well, this is just it. You know, it had been
one half a one.
Yeah, well, there have been burglaries in Britain, and you know, I think a farmer had his house burgled three or four times, and at the fifth time he shot the burglar, and he ended up being sent to prison for it. You know, the farmer
Yeah,
that's sickening, isn't it?
But, yeah, I remember
that's such an old principle of you know, being able to defend your own property. They say, well, the police aren't supposed to defend us. The police are there to solve crimes. They're not there to prevent them from happening. They're there to solve crimes. If they prevented crimes from happening, they would be out of a job. So the police don't prevent these things happening. It's supposed to be us that prevent these things happening and the police that solve the crimes. And that's just the way that it's supposed to be. So we are supposed to be defending our country, and we're supposed to be defending our homes if somebody breaks in. And they've twisted twisted that law.
To be honest, I think the police in Britain, I think it's got to a stage where the respect from the public is now at the lowest ebb, because for a number of years, you know, they've been hammering certain the motorists with fines and things, and then, you know, they bring out laws like on a Friday night, if two people are arrested, no matter who starts the fight or who's defending anybody, if they're arrested and put in the cells, they're both fined £80. You know, it's just a means to, I mean, the police is a limited company, and therefore profit is the prime goal. And so it's not actually the police working for the public anymore. It's a private corporation, again, looking to make profit, which is a whole different ballgame. So I think they're bringing out a programme, I think on BBC in the next few weeks, about the Met, probably trying to enhance the reputation, because at the moment, I think the police, very few people, I think, if a police situation happened where they needed assistance, once over where they would have automatically got it. I'm not convinced they would automatically get it today. And that is their own doing, to be quite honest.
Well, yeah, it's more important for them to go arresting people for saying mean words than it is for arresting people for rape and murder. And they don't want to be arresting anyone who's not white anyway, because they'll just get accused of racism then.
Which goes back to the Rotherham thing. Yeah, they didn't want to actually investigate because they were found to be called racist.
Well, this is a whole different podcast that we can do, I think, on the way that the laws have been changed and subverted against us. I mean, the traditional usages of the island of Britain, you could never take a man's children away from him. That was a cardinal law, a cardinal rule. A man could not be deprived of his home, his wife and children, or the tools of his trade. And look at what they do now. They just snatched, you know, they snatched the children away by the state. And that was the cardinal
and the house.
Yeah, that was a usage of Britain that just could not be done. That was, you know, no law could change that. No king could change that. Nothing could change those laws. And they've changed every single one of them.
Well, apparently the change in the Magna Carta law to the Talmudic law, which then, you know, changes the old situation completely. You have no rights at all.
This Magna Carta thing, this mockery of a trial that they're going to do. But I think we'll have to go into that in another episode, Dennis, because we've gone over time a little bit here now. So, I'll just remind people that you can find us in the chat room, which is radiostormerchat.space. And obviously, you can find our programs on thedailystormer.com. You can find Dennis at Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told. You can also find him on YouTube. And what was the name of that your series you're working on at the moment, Dennis? Or anything else that you want to tell people about before we go?
Communism by the Back Door. Yeah, I'm on. I think I'm up to nine episodes up to now. I'm hoping to do an episode on Christianity, an episode on Israel, and just tie a few loose ends up with another episode, maybe three episodes. So interesting viewing if people want to watch it. Quite sure they'll find some useful information.
Yeah, or maybe we can go into some of those subjects in the next episode. And if people want to ask Dennis any other questions on bits from his documentary, then put it in the comment section or let us know in the chat room. Okay, so thank you very much for listening, and we do hope to see you again next time.
Bye.